Good morning and welcome to 60 Seconds, a TV news magazine that gets famous people from the past to time travel to the present for an interview. My name is Scoop Singleton, and I'm your host. Tonight's guest is Matthew, disciple of Jesus. Thanks for being here for part two of our interview. Part two, the combination, the continuation, the square root, the sequel? The I don't know. That's all I got. Matthew, he's an apostle, a disciple, and gospel author, formerly known as Levi the tax collector, and now a time traveler. I sat down with this New Testament hero to ask him about chapter 5 of his gospel. Matthew, I want to talk to you about chapter 5, verses 21 through 30. Jesus said that everyone who is angry with his brother is liable to judgment. My question, and it's a biggie, did he mean that? Yes or no?
Yes, he did.
Dang it! I was afraid of that. Matthew, seriously, have you met my brother? He is such a pain!
So you're angry at your brother, and you call him names?
And you don't call him names.
Next question. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. Did he mean that? Yes or no?
No, and...
Yes, oh, thank you. I was so worried. I would look awful with an eye patch.
But yes, he did mean that.
No. You're killing me right now. We'll be right back after this sermon message. I'm Scoop. There it is.
No. This is my better eye. No.
Tad ridiculous, huh? But I'll take it. It's good stuff, yeah. Good morning. I am so excited to be here with you this morning. We are in a series called You've Heard It Said, where we're looking at Jesus' teachings from the Sermon on the Mount, where he's expounding on and talks about the heart behind some specific Old Testament moral laws. Last week, we identified that Jesus is not trying to abolish these laws, but he's here to fulfill them. And much like an acorn fulfills its purpose when it grows into an oak tree, right? Jesus is here to fulfill the law because righteousness is needed to be holy. And we cannot be holy by ourselves. We can only be holy through Jesus. And how much of a relief is that, right? Nothing I can do will attain my holiness no matter how hard I try. Jesus is the answer. He is righteous, and he gets me there. I'm excited about that. The other point we need to remember is that Jesus is not lowering the bar of holiness. He's showing us where it needs to be by raising it. This morning, we're going to be reading about murder and anger and reconciliation. And this passage just happens to fall on Mother's Day. This is not some kind of passive-aggressive thing towards my mother. And we're talking about this today. But I will say this, Jesus starts talking about our heart and reconciliation, and sometimes we need to hear this about all our relationships, especially those with our family. So let's jump into the text for today. You've heard it said, you've heard that it was said of those to old, you shall not murder. And whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who's angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. Whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the fires of hell. Liable to the same judgment if you're angry, if you commit murder. Wow. All right, show of hands, anyone been angry this week? Yeah? Oh, yes. Got a few people willing to throw it out there. Hopefully, as we dig into this topic of anger, we can leave with some hope here. How many of you have ever read this verse before and thought, well, I have not and do not plan on killing anyone, so I'm going to keep on reading, move on. I've done that. And that's the legalistic approach that Jesus is against. This week, when I was looking at this passage, studying it, and it said every time that anyone who is angry with their brother or their sister or their wife or their mom or their dad will be liable to judgment. It's the same judgment that murderers face. Man, if I were to ask for a show of hands how many people have actually murdered someone in this room, I'd wager not a lot of hands. Hopefully none. And you realize that bar has been set pretty low. You committed murder, you're in danger of judgment. And Jesus says, if you're angry, you're in danger of that same kind of judgment. He's calling us to far exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. He's saying, I'm bringing the kingdom of God to you. And I want you to know, hey, it's a high bar. It's a high standard, but I invite you to come and be a part of it. He continues on, so if you're offering your gift at the altar and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly, I say to you, you will never get out. You've paid the last penny. It's hard to stomach. Just before Jesus was teaching the Sermon on the Mount, where he's calling us into his kingdom, it says that Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. I got to ask you, does this passage sound like good news? You're angry, you're going to burn? I wrestle with that. And I want you to know that the Sermon on the Mount is good news. I want to let you know this passage is very, very good news for us. It's just the way we just have to dig into it a little bit, right? So Jesus is saying these verses to us. But when I read this, I want to say, Jesus, didn't you get angry? Didn't you have anger in the Bible? I want you to look at this picture of Jesus, this image of Jesus, right? What if this was the image of Jesus you had to look at every day rather than the calm and peaceful Jesus that we like to see? You imagine explaining to your kids this one? I don't want to strip Jesus of his humanity. He got angry. He got angry. And he's telling us not to be angry. But Jesus is not a do what I say, not what I do kind of teacher. So something's not jiving here, right? So I want to take a look at what Jesus is angry about. In Mark chapter 3, there's a man with a withered hand, a palsied hand. And it was the Sabbath. And Jesus had been teaching, and the scribes and the Pharisees were in the corner. And someone brought this guy up with a withered hand, and the scribes are watching to see what Jesus is going to do. Is he going to heal him? Because if he does, that's too much work on the Sabbath. We're going to trap him. And Jesus said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or to just ignore the good work? Nobody said anything. It was quiet. And then this verse comes. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and the hand was restored. Jesus was so grieved with a lack of compassion. They were not, that they would adhere to and promote a system that couldn't even be compassionate to the man right in front of them. I believe that's what's going on here. That's why Jesus is so grieved. He's so moved with love for these people that he's angry they can't get beyond their blindness. So yes, he's angry. But he's angry because he's motivated by love. Another time is when Jesus overturned the money changers' table in the temple. And Jesus entered the temple and drove out all who sold and bought in the temple. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. Can you imagine if that's the only time you're mentioned in the Bible is that you sold pigeons? So I believe that Jesus is angry here. And I don't know if he's angry at the money changers, and I don't know if he's angry at the Pharisees and these pigeon sellers. But I think he's 100% angry at a system that exploits people. A system that's supposed to bring peace to the lives of these individuals, and instead it exploited them. It extorted them for money, and he went there and he cleaned his house. He's angry. Another time, a deep anger welled up within him. He was deeply troubled. And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb, and it was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. A couple verses before this is the verse that we all love to memorize because it's so easy. Jesus wept. And he's standing at Lazarus' tomb, and a deep anger wells up within him. And for years, I thought he was angry at the people who were watching, who just didn't have quite enough faith to think that Jesus could actually make a difference here. And the more I look at it, the more I think Jesus is angry at death. He's angry at decay. He's angry that this had entered his creation and was ruining it. In fact, he'd already said to them generations and generations and generations before, way back in the garden, hey, all this is yours. This is paradise. And I want to walk with you. And I want to talk with you. And there's one thing I don't want you to do, and it's eat from that tree. And if you eat from that tree, you're going to die. And we ate from that tree. We've been dying ever since. Jesus is angry at that which comes into his creation and ruins it. So that brings us to today's verses. I look at Jesus' anger that's been demonstrated in these verses. We've got anger that's motivated by love. We've got anger that's against a system that exploits. And we've got anger against death that destroys his creation. But what Jesus says to us here is, but I say to you that anyone who's angry with his brother be liable to judgment. And I think that's the difference. We look at Jesus' anger, and I don't see it directed toward other people. Yes, people are involved, but he sees through what the problem is with those people to the core. Now, I have a confession to make. I have a really hard time when I'm driving and a guy cuts me off. Or when someone else does something stupid and it affects me. I have a hard time with that. I get angry. And I get angry with people. And Jesus is inviting me to become part of his kingdom, and he's telling me that there's no room for that. The word angry here is interesting. There's two words for angry in the New Testament. One is an anger that's an eruption. It's an explosion. It happens just like that. And then there's this word, which is kind of like a slow boil. It's kind of like swelling up. It means to swell up or infection. It infects you. I read somewhere someone said it's like a pimple on your nose. You know something's not right, but you can't quite see it, but everybody else can. Doesn't feel right. And that's what this anger is. It swells up, it infects, it distorts. And I want to go to the next part of the passage. But I say to you that everyone who's angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. Whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the fire, the hell of fire. I don't know if I like this translation much. There's one translation that says, if you call your brother an idiot, I like the word idiot. It just kind of flows off my tongue. It's not a good thing. This is the word raka, which means empty. Some have translated it to mean empty-headed, hence the in translation, idiot. It seems to mean, in the language, in the context, an empty person. In other words, you look at a person, you see right through them. You see nothing. You are dehumanizing them. They are not worth your time. You don't see them. There's an emptiness. You degrade them. One of the most striking instances of dehumanization of a people group was in World War II. It was ugly and it was evil. And I can't imagine how they're looking at a group of people and vilifying them so much where they're not even seen as humans. Whether they were Jewish or homosexuals or gypsies, they were taken to concentration camps so that civilized people could forget about them. I believe that what Jesus is saying here is, that's not part of my kingdom. Never dehumanize another person. I love them. My football coach in high school, his name was Drew Bowie. He played wide receiver for the Raiders when Madden was coaching, which was super cool. And he was a Christian man. And he refused to call someone a fool, even if they were doing something dumb, and teenagers do dumb things. So instead, he would call them loof, which is fool backwards. He thought he was getting around the system here. And that was funny to me at the time. But that's not the way this works. Jesus is talking about the heart. Using the term raka was dehumanizing. This word fool in Greek is moros, where we get the word moron from. It's also where we get the word morals from. Interesting, right? Morals and moron come from the same word. Because really, in their mind, a moron is someone who is devoid, absent of morals. And you see a person, and you say, you have no moral value. And I believe when we do that, we de-image that person. That person's made in God's image. Every person in this room is made in the image of God. Every person in this community is made in the image of God. And when you drive down 183 and that guy cuts you off, do you say, hey, he's made in the image of God? No. Probably not. I don't want to speak for any of you. Probably not. But Jesus is saying, hey, it's my kingdom, and I'm inviting you to do that. I want to empower you to be able to do that. We are not to dehumanize. We're not to devalue. We're not to de-image. We are to lift God's people up in love around us. I believe that the kingdom living is a commitment to God's view of people. And we need to come and embrace that. Put ourselves at the mercy of that. In Matthew 22, Jesus was asked an important question. What is the greatest commandment? And this is what he said. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. The entire law and all of it, all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. Love the Lord your God. Love your neighbor as yourself. I told you earlier that the word idiot rolls off my tongue too quickly. Sometimes when it rolls off my tongue, it's talking about me. I usually say, you idiot, how did you forget that? Or why did you write that down, you idiot? I begin to realize something surprising this week. This passage says we've got to love ourselves. And I've come to grips with the fact that I, too, have been made in God's image. So when I say, to myself, when I say, oh, you idiot, I'm saying to God, you made an idiot here. But we're made in God's image. So what does that mean about God? Love yourself. Love your neighbor. What happens when we've offended someone or we've been offended? Jesus goes on, so if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out till you've paid the last penny. We are to be reconciled. Easy to say, right? I've said it. Good morning. No. We are to be reconciled. And I know that there is a lot of emotion and history and pain that comes along with being offended. And as Christians, what does reconciliation look like? Well, I want to remind you, there are always two parties, at least two parties, to each conflict. So what do you do if you're offended? What do you do if you are the offending party? You need to realize that you are called to resolution. So I want to go over a conflict resolution roadmap with you. All right? So first, you need to determine if you are even in conflict. If you are, it's got to be dealt with. Romans 12 says, if possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. So how do we determine if we are in conflict? Our verses from Matthew today have us ask ourselves, have I sinned against someone? Has someone sinned against me? Think about these questions. Has someone broken my trust? Have I spoken poorly about someone? Proverbs 26:20 says, for lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases. Or how about this? Are you imagining payback or revenge or justice? Romans 12 says, beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. And by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Or rather this, am I actively avoiding someone? Is there someone that you just don't want to see or you're nervous to be around because of some issue? If you answered yes to any of these questions, that someone's offended you, let's take a look at the next step in the roadmap, which is, can it be overlooked? Can you make allowance for the faults of others? Can you forgive and move on? Ephesians 4 says, Therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. The ability to overlook is important. But there are times not to overlook. The First thing, you should not overlook an offense if it offends God, if it dishonors God. Romans 2, you who boast in the law dishonor God by breaking the law. For as is written, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. If the offense causes God to be dishonored in the perception of either believers or non-believers, then resolution is important. First, if the offense honors God. The second, if the offense broke a relationship. Proverbs 18, a brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city. And quarreling is like the bars of a castle. When a family breaks a bond, when one person's offended, it is so hard to break down that conflict. It's harder to break down that conflict than the bars of a city that prevent invasion. Third is if the offense is hurting others. Philippians 2, 4, let each of you not look to his own interests, but to the interests of others. Others are being hurt, it has to be addressed. And lastly, if the offense is hurting the offender. James 5, my brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Our goal here is the caring of other people. Don't forget. These are the reasons that an offense should not be overlooked. Next step on a roadmap, on our conflict resolution roadmap, is to ask, what is my part to own? We have to recognize the blame never rests 100% on another party. Galatians 6, for if someone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in him alone and not in his neighbor, for each will have to bear his own load. We need to ask ourselves, what of our actions, however big or small, have contributed to this conflict? When that reality is recognized, you have to apologize. And apologies can be tricky. A true apology is not just saying sorry and moving on. A real apology admits that what you've done wrong. You say you're sorry, you ask for forgiveness, and you accept the consequences. Y'all were with me to those first three, and then that fourth one, accepting the consequences, now that was the hard one. We want to say I'm sorry and have no consequence for our actions. And our last step on the roadmap is actually seeking reconciliation. Gently and lovingly point out another's part in a conflict and try to make amends. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Talk first in private. That doesn't go well. Get together with one or two others and have the same conversation. That doesn't work. Bring in the church leadership. And if that doesn't work, there are actions and consequences laid out in the Bible if we have to go further than that for conflict resolution. But don't let it fester. Jesus said it's not enough to just not murder somebody. We must not hate in our hearts. And this is about you. Not the wrong someone else did. You are responsible for you. Be mindful that God's in control. I think too many times we want to have control. I want to go. I want to make sure this person forgives me. This person gets over it or whatever. God is in control. He's got his timing. So we need to be realistic about this whole process. As I go and I seek reconciliation with someone, it may not be reciprocated. And you know what? That's okay. God didn't say it had to be reciprocated. Jesus said, go to that person and then come back and worship me. This morning, you might need to make a phone call on your way home. You might need to take someone aside in the lobby today, or at work tomorrow, or when you get home with your family. Yes, we struggle with anger. Yes, we struggle with reconciliation. And yes, we struggle with God, that we really do have worth. But Jesus has invited you to be a part of his kingdom. He's telling you how to live your lives better. Don't just murder. Love one another in your heart. And that's what he's asking of us, to love and to do it well.